I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Mr. Beacon podcast. We're back to the healthcare market, and we're talking to another interesting company, Vizia, Andreas Stavropoulos, who is Director of Product at Vizia Technologies. They are a healthcare architect of solutions, systems integration company, solutions provider. Healthcare's been at the vanguard of IoT and real-time location systems from the earliest days. And there's a lot of companies making a lot of money selling into this, but it's still a market that is wide open. Andreas caught my attention. He contacted me as a listener to the show, but dropped into the conversation that he runs a lab where they evaluate different technologies. And so that got me going. We had this conversation. We don't just talk about the technology. We talk a lot about the business aspects that impact solution design and product, what the use cases are, who's buying, but also we go through a discussion of the different technologies that are out there. And so I think you'll find that useful and interesting, even if you are not focused on healthcare. Stay with us for that. Also wanted to use this part of the show to thank the folks at AIM. So AIM is the professional association for auto ID, and they work on standards for identification, barcodes, ambient IoT, RFID. And I was really honored that they have given this podcast the Burt Moore Excellence in Journalism Award. And Burt Moore is an early writer and evangelist in the auto ID industry, did some amazing work. So to have anything that's named after him is really awesome. And I am tremendously grateful to the folks at AIM for giving us this. This is, you know, really for me, it's a hobby. It's an excuse to stay current, and it's a way of continuing the life of the Beacon Technologies, the book that I wrote years ago. Now it's turned into a way of engaging with some really cool people and just having some great conversations. So to get an award like this is humbling and really, really gratifying. So thank you, AIM. So let's move on and listen to the conversation with Andreas. I think you'll really enjoy it.
The Mr. Beacon Ambient IoT podcast is sponsored by Wiliot, bringing intelligence to every single thing.
Well, Andreas, welcome to the Mr. Beacon podcast. I'm really excited to have you on because you're a solution provider, so you have to solve all sorts of problems. B, you are focused on healthcare, which is a very important area in this whole IoT space. It's one of the most fruitful areas for solution designers and entrepreneurs to focus on. So I think we can learn from you. And three, you're kind of doing a bit of what I've done, which is to kick the tires, test lots of different systems. So I am keen to pick your brains and hear a bit about what you've found. But let's start off where we normally start off, where you explain a little bit about Vizier and what you guys do.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a real honor to be here. Vizier is a company that has been in the healthcare space for almost 20 years. And it's a company that has always focused on questions around providing value to customers through transparency. Mm-hmm. And the origins of that were in equipment transparency, you know, kind of the straight asset tracking and then eventually asset management use case. That has evolved over time as different technologies have become more competent, more capable, and also users have become more sophisticated over time. But essentially, you know, Vizier is a company that we work with many different OEMs, but we don't build at the hardware layer. We don't do engineering at the hardware layer. We do engineering at the software layer, and then we do we are present at the sites of all of our customers for the many stages of deploying, designing, deploying, maintaining a solution. Because one of the things that became evident early on was that an engineering solution alone, even an excellent one, was not going to fulfill the promise of return on investment. And it was not, you know, so there needed to be kind of an integration specialist, and there needed to be some level of, I don't know if I would call it exactly white glove service, but essentially sort of carrying forward and ensuring that the promise of the solution was actually delivered on. And that has, you know, we've seen a lot of technology change over time. And so some of it is a lot easier to deploy, to design, to maintain, to do change management on. But the fact that there is kind of a human component required to educate, to train, to check in, to expand use cases as the customer needs, that hasn't changed. And we've been focused on that for a long time. And it's been a successful strategy in which, as the technology changes, we can evaluate, you know, what the best fit for the customer is. Because we want to be in a position where years after signing a contract, the customer is saying to us, "I'm so glad that we went with the solution that you recommended." And the flexibility in solution stack allows us to kind of match the best technology with our hardware, which was explicitly designed, with our software, which was explicitly designed to be hardware agnostic and to be able to ingest information from different OEMs and hardware solutions. We want to be in a future state, and we have kind of completed this full circle with many of our customers where they say, "Thank you for recommending this software to me. I now want to do something else that I didn't even know about, but you did. And so now we actually have a platform that we can do that on." So that's kind of a short version of Vizier and kind of how it sort of uniquely fits in and has kind of uniquely designed a solution stack with kind of a flexible hardware layer.
Great. So you're architecting these solutions, and I think y'all have learned a lot of things on the way. And I want to get into what are some of the use cases that you've focused on, and you know, the lessons that you've learned, and your view on the different technologies. Before we go there, just let's complete to painting the rough picture of your firm. What? Tell me a bit about your customer base, the kind of size kind of customers that you have.
Yeah, our customer base is mostly comprised of medium to large hospitals, predominantly in the Southeast and Southern California. That said, we do have, you know, significant presence of, field ops there. So that allows us to be very present and kind of to fulfill the promise that we make when we begin a contract with the customer. So that said, we are kind of constantly expanding on those geographies. And there have been instances where customers who are not in that immediate geography, we do find a good way to kind of maximize the value that we can give to them.
And how big is the firm?
Oh, gosh. I think it's approximately 50 people kind of across the board.
Very good. So you have quite a lot of capacity there to bring pieces together. And who do you find yourself competing against when you're looking to close new business? What sort of companies is it? I mean, I tend to get very focused on the OEMs, the original equipment manufacturers, the people that are making the technology. So are you finding yourself competing with a Stanley Black & Decker, someone who's got their own solution and an ecosystem around them, or do you just consider them as a potential supplier to a project that you'd be designing?
That's a great question. So depending on the OEM, they may offer a full stack solution. So let's say I'm the OEM, my hardware, my software, my crew deploying it. But there's also a lot of OEMs out there who recognize that there are limitations and they need to focus their expertise really on the hardware and providing that. So oftentimes we will collaborate with those OEMs who are looking for a best-in-class software solution to go with their hardware. And that includes OEMs that may even have their own software, but recognize that there are kind of some unique capabilities of ours because we've been specifically making software for, 15 years. And that's a significant lead time when you're talking about answering the specific questions that users in the hospital are looking to have answered. So to back up for a second, we have gone up against probably most OEMs who are in this space. We have also been in a situation, many situations, where a hospital has been dissatisfied with a solution that they've implemented. Mm-hmm. It could be because there are technical limitations and, maybe the reality of owning a hardware solution don't quite match up with the promise. And so that is a situation that is fairly common for us too, where we are looked to essentially remediate a hospital from a failed implementation, or perhaps an implementation that was not a complete failure, but degraded with time due to some level of neglect and had become more of a, I won't say liability, but it wasn't providing value in according to kind of the original promise. So I think that Vizia has a reputation also for being looked to remediate situations from some other providers.
I used to work at this great company called Sequent Computer Systems, and amazing culture, pioneering technology. And one of the other aspects of the company, which was really cool, was the CEO, who's a fantastic storyteller and salesperson. He used to be general manager of Intel's microprocessor products division. And from him, I learned the value of storytelling and metaphors. And the metaphor he loved to use was second surgeon, which seems to be kind of very apt for what you're describing. And you know, the story is you find out who's really good after you've kind of rushed in and you've had your knee surgery with basically the first doctor you could find that was available. And suddenly you realize that actually this is more complicated than you think, and you're experiencing pain. And then you really look around and ask around and find who is the best in this business, because my second surgeon needs to really be able to fix the pain that I'm in. So it sounds like you're sometimes a second surgeon who, I mean, I'm not super experienced in the healthcare space other than being a consumer of it. So who are the big OEMs that you run across in this marketplace?
Yeah, I mean, the ones that you mentioned, Stanley, Sonitor, Centrec. Let's see, who else? Contact.io.
Yes.
Potentially, okay. HID. So there's a lot of folks. You know, I think that it's not difficult to describe the value that is possible in the healthcare environment, right? Mm-hmm. You know, things are expensive, they disappear, it's extremely complex. So the narrative to create and the spreadsheets to create are quite simple. Mm. And the pitch that you can make to a CFO is quite simple. And the pitch that you can make to the director of clinical engineering, you know, it also resonates. Mm-hmm. But it is really the longevity and kind of capability of the solution that's going to determine how valuable it is to the customer. And there's an inherent asymmetry in a hospital looking for a real-time location solution. And the asymmetry is very simple. It's that this is a decision that they will make once, you know, twice. You know, given the tenure of and availability of RTLS, you know, you're not talking about someone who's making a decision and sort of staying fresh on research and information. And so the asymmetry of there is that they have very imperfect information, whereas we are tracking all of these developments and we're actually bringing in each of these technologies that we think will be promising, again, for this to address the specific challenges of healthcare, which are different. They're different than warehousing. They're different than, you know, fabrication. And because we've been around for a long time, we know where all the bear traps are and what to look for. So essentially, you know, we are sort of a professional buyer of hardware, and we don't make those decisions lightly. We very, very carefully consider different technologies and kind of square that against needs that the customer has explained. But also, we do take a little bit of liberty to know that the customer may actually have future needs that they're not able to articulate because they don't know about them, or they're just not along that, you know, they're not on that path for sort of RTLS adoption or kind of organizational sophistication to be able to use cases or things like that. So we're looking out for our customers and trying to source the best hardware for them. And that's based on lab testing. There's very, very few places that you can actually do side-by-side comparisons of RTLS, let alone have five, six, seven, eight systems operating simultaneously. And in the lab, we construct simulated clinical environments that create some of the, sort of the bear traps that I mentioned earlier, where we know that the technology sometimes falls flat and sometimes doesn't deliver. It could be related to the presence of glass. It could be related to, the presence of a lot of metal, like around the headboard of a bed, the positioning mm-hmm. of equipment in a room. There's a long list of things that a hospital, when they're considering a solution, unless they've done this, unless they're CIO or whoever the contact person is, whoever the champion of the project is, unless they've gone through this multiple times recently, they're not going to have the sort of fresh information.
Yeah.
So I think that's where we provide a lot of value.
It's a great point. How is that clinical hospital environment different to a manufacturing environment or a retail environment from your solution design architecture perspective?
Sure. Well, it can, not always, but it can start with the architecture. So, in a hospital, we're typically dealing with a lot of rooms that are in close proximity to each other, drop ceilings, concrete slab floors, metal stud walls, some combination of glass wall and not. That's evolving. More recently constructed hospitals have more glass. Typically, you're getting into really like a condensed environment where your room size is very small, but you still need to know, in an ideal case scenario, you really want to know, is it in the room? Or is it in the next room?
Yes.
Like that's a very, very important distinction, depending on yes. the use case. I'm not going to say that that is the only acceptable threshold of location quality. But once you start to move up from sort of the simple use cases to the more complex ones, you don't want to be sending out a staff duress alert, which is, a call for security to come help. And unfortunately, that's becoming much more common, but you don't want to send out a staff duress alert from the wrong room, which could also be in the wrong wing of a hospital.
Yeah, I remember being told that infrared technology got a real place in healthcare because of that. Light doesn't go through walls. Radio waves do. And obviously, you can solve the radio waves bleeding problem in a variety of ways. But are you seeing infrared still being a predominant solution, or is it giving way to other things?
Both, I would say. Both are true. I think that, there's a spectrum of use cases which demand performance in a couple of dimensions. One of the dimensions is latency. The other dimension is accuracy. So you've got those. And then you have the other consideration of form factors and availability of tags, which there's a lot of specific requirements in healthcare. When clinicians are trying to track something as small as a small telemetry box, up to a, larger medical equipment. So when you overlay like a lot of those requirements and you try and kind of consider use cases that may not be front of mind right now, but are increasingly front of mind for customers, like I mentioned, like a staff duress use case or an infant wandering or patient workflow or hand hygiene compliance, it then just becomes a question of what type of solution are we going to create and recommend that will satisfy that will basically take that customer as long as they want to go on the arc of use cases. And there are, you know, infrared was is you know what I call kind of a bounded signal, right? Like I said, there is some complexity when you get into more glass. Ultrasound is a bounded signal, and then RF, as you mentioned, can bleed and you know get into interference and things like that. That said, there are significant advances in RF and Bluetooth that is making it behave more similarly to something bounded, but there are still trade-offs in that you might be trading a high level of, let's call it room level accuracy. You might be trading that for increased latency, because in order to develop the quality of that location, the processing time that's required to run the algorithms is greater than just like a binary read from an ultrasound, from an infrared. I'm in the room, I'm not in the room.
So I don't quite understand the, can you go into that latency thing a bit more? Are you talking about cloud analytics that are kind of smoothing out the signal strength fluctuations? Is that the
right latency? I mean, what I'm talking about is some of the more successful Bluetooth systems that that we've tested are they are, I call them successful because they do have pretty good accuracy, kind of room level accuracy. But the reason that they have room level accuracy is because the tags are collecting information over a specified amount of time, and then you know, they're sending those packets up to the cloud to be resolved into a location. And, you know, just the time required to kind of collect location information, sending into the cloud, processing it, and resolving that into a geofenced area on a map, that is where we see latency kind of accumulate over those various stages.
I can't get this duress use case out of my mind. Why do you think the incidence is going up?
Oh, I think that's a much larger conversation related to kind of violence in our society than we will probably have time to get into. But I think suffice to say that there was just a New York Times article, I think about a week ago, talking about emergency departments, acts of violence, and kind of the increasing need for that use case, for staff to be able to send a discreet communication saying, I need help. Again, unfortunately, that use case is also present in a much broader swath, like schools, is another area. We are not in that, you know, vertical. We're not providing solutions to that environment, and it's very sad, but it is a reality.
Yeah, I have a friend that works at PricewaterhouseCoopers PwC, and they've deployed RTLS systems in most of the hotels in the Las Vegas Strip. And their system uses a low power wide area network technology, and that's exactly the use case. It's all of the cleaners and the hotel staff who are frequently getting threatened or assaulted, and it's kind of very sad. So let's move on from that use case, and I am interested in just going through some of the key use cases. You've touched on them already, but where do you think the ROI is? Where are the trends going? Is there anything kind of, has there been an epiphany? I mean, it seems like improving the patient experience, helping them find their way through this labyrinth, automating the check-in. It seemed like COVID was a driver for automating the check-in, but I sort of see a lot of half-baked attempts to do this, and people with systems in place that aren't really used half of the time. So what are you, let's spend a bit of time on the use cases and who the winners are and the losers are in the use case race, where the value is, where the difficulty is.
Sure. So when I think about use cases, I think I mentioned this previously, I kind of structure them in my mind along a spectrum of performance requirements from the RTLS with those two dimensions of location accuracy and latency. And roughly the progression that I think of use cases in medical RTLS are, you know, kind of ACID tracking. We're starting obviously with the lowest level requirements of, and, you know, moving to maybe wayfinding, patient tracking, staff tracking, patient workflow, hand hygiene compliance, staff duress, elopement. That's kind of the spectrum that I might of use cases that I might kind of put along that line. And the, you know, we're in a situation where the ROI and the case for RTLS with regards to asset tracking is becoming very well understood, even though the majority of hospitals don't have RTLS. I would say that the vast majority of hospitals and people in decision-making positions in those hospitals have knowledge of RTLS. And probably, based on the number of studies out there, probably believe that it could indeed provide value to their organization over time and if it's done well. That said, like, you know, some of the, I'll call it like the up and coming use cases are patient workflow and staff duress and hand hygiene compliance. I'll talk about hand hygiene compliance a little bit because that's kind of come on fairly strong lately. Mm-hmm. And I do think was, you know, although not a lot of movement happened during COVID, I would say that a lot of awareness was created during COVID of hospital acquired infections and the role that technology can play in reducing those. So hand hygiene compliance is quite demanding, right? Because you have to know when did a caretaker enter a room or a zone or a geofenced boundary, you know, whatever we want to call it. When did they enter that? And when did a hand hygiene event occur? And how are we defining that? Are we defining it because we have a piece of hardware that says when soap was dispensed? Are we defining it because we have a high level of location accuracy and a very low latency, so a very responsive system, and we could actually create like a small geofenced area around the sink, you know? So there's questions about how to define it. And the reason that a lot of folks are trying to solve this as quickly as possible is because, number one, it's related to patient care and the quality of care and readmittance. And that, of course, is also linked to how hospitals are compensated for their services. They, you know, if a hospital acquired infection occurs and the patient needs to stay in the hospital, there is some portion of that that the hospital needs to essentially foot the bill for. And so there's a strong level of impetus, you know, is there a way that we can use this technology but simultaneously make it as invisible as possible? And once we use it to figure out what's going on, how do we then percolate those findings into, you know, adjusting and training the behavior of the people that are doing that frontline work? So that's become very significant lately, along with staff duress, I would say.
I was speaking to someone, I think it was at a Coupa conference in Finland, and they had been using Angle of Arrival. It was actually a US solution provider based in Florida. And their system, I believe, would have some kind of visual indicator that the doctors wore that showed if they had were on top of their hand washing or not. And the idea was that the patient's family would say, you know, doctor, why is that red light flashing on your lapel there? The green light isn't on. And then the doctor would be so embarrassed that they basically had been caught not washing their hands, because that was basically the indicator, that compliance went way, way up, because the thing that doctors fear the most is losing that feeling of superiority, losing face in front of nurses and patients and patients' families. I'm not sure. It now seems so far-fetched. I can't believe that it actually worked that way. But how do you tell people that they need to wash their hands if they haven't?
Well, first things first, we need to collect the baseline data to kind of understand what the level of compliance is. And then we need to have those tricky discussions with the customer, like what level of surfacing and transparency do you want in this data? The example that you just mentioned is dramatic. No, I mean, it's like someone showed up in a room and they're wearing, you know, a big A on their shirt or something. Right. So, you know, that's obviously a very dramatic example. And that organization, I'm sure, had to think carefully about whether how we want to present this and how we want to do change management within our ranks. So I think that we don't consider it to be our place to prescribe how an organization changes. We really see our role as providing the best information to the level of granularity that is desired, which can be individuals. You know, it can be, well, Steve, you are not washing your hands, my friend, you know, or the same thing of me. But, you know, getting it that last mile. And that kind of goes back to the communication piece that I keep talking about, like really making the, you know, implementing it. We have suggestions, we have ideas, we have things that we've seen be successful, but ultimately the customer or kind of the manager of that program needs to decide what's going to work for their organization, or try something, and then if that doesn't work, try something else.
So just to reiterate, most hospitals are still not doing any of this. Is that a fair question to say?
Statement? I mean, the numbers are changing rapidly, right? So, you know, if I'm looking at the number of hospitals that have an RTLS, you know, I might be only able to get data from 2022 or 2021. And, but yes, I believe we're still under 50%. You know, penetration of RTLS in mid to large size hospitals. And that's not even talking about the different use cases. That's talking about like the most basic use case of asset tracking. And so, you know, that does create some opportunities and questions around, you know, some hospitals, they need a solution now. And they may be able to afford, you know, this solution. And it might be a viable solution for their most pressing pain point, which is asset tracking, shrinkage of the fleet, utilization, things like that. And so part of the process of really working with the customer is to understand how forward thinking they are. Are they kind of fixated on the known tried and true ROI in asset tracking, or are they also kind of thinking of the spectrum of future uses that we know from talking to hospitals all across the country is coming? It's coming fast, and it's linked to real, real dollars for the hospitals, many of which are struggling. You know, that's again sort of that role that we can play as a strategic advisor. We're not we don't do consulting work, but as part of the sales process, we do sort of like to say, you know, are you aware of these things? Do you know that this is happening? Have you considered? And that kind of may change the stance of the hospital on the different solutions that they're going to look at or consider.
So it sounds like you're doing consultative selling, solution selling. What is your diagnosis of the patient, in this case, the hospital administration? Why are they still not using these tools that have been around for a long time?
I think that adoption of a new technology is very complex, and getting people to the drive by a hospital to adopt a new technology can come from any number of places. It can come from perhaps the CIO. It can come from perhaps the CFO. It can come from the director of clinical engineering. It can come from the director of nursing, biomedical engineering. So that is a little bit of a messy process to kind of understand. And once you have that project champion, they may be kind of the spiritual champion of the project, but they may need to spend somebody else's money to achieve that. So the level of internal coordination that's required to really launch this campaign to adopt a new technology is just the sales cycles are very, very long. And I think that is why there's a lot of companies that are kind of raising their hand and saying, hey, you know, we're in this business, we got this, we can manage your assets. And they may not realize that it could take 5 years for them to make a sale. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but a very, very long time. And so given that cycle, I think that also leads to hospitals making decisions that are inherently a little bit more conservative about companies that have seen this, been there, done that, you know, that are going to be around in 5-10 years, as opposed to kind of like, hey, you know, we got your engineering solution, we got it, you know, let's deploy it. So I don't think it's I can keep adding layers to this cake, but you've got the layer of hospitals are always, positions are always turning over, you know, at every level.
That is the challenge, isn't it? If the time to implement is 36 months and the average tenure of a CIO is 24 months, then you've got an inherent problem there. You've got to just hope that you've got someone who's beating the averages, or maybe their successor will see an opportunity to take credit for something that's teed up and ready to go. But that is actually one of the issues, is the massive churn of staff. And I see that in retail. You forge relationships throughout business. You forge relationships and you're taking a gamble. You're betting on the person as well as the institution that you're selling to, just in the same way as they're betting on you. So I guess, does that actually factor in your qualification? Do you think like, yeah, this person's got a problem I can solve. They've got budget. The project's big enough. But this guy or gal is just not going to be around long enough to see this through. Is that?
I mean, it's impossible to like use that as, you know, we can't benchmark that. We can't plan for that unless they tell us, which would be unusual. But so we try and diversify the interest in the solution and try and bring in as many stakeholders as possible throughout the process, so that if somebody does depart, they are not the only kind of champion of the project. Somebody else can kind of pick it up. But, you know, we've had things stall out for a long time because somebody left and they kind of got put by the wayside, and it was of interest to somebody else, but it wasn't their priority. So it, you know, kind of got iced for a while. And then somebody else comes in or something happens and lo and behold, you know, let's go. We're ready to do this thing.
I do want to get into the technology, which was sort of the hook that got me interested in in this conversation, but this is just too good to give up. Because I think, again, our audience, I like to think, are solution designers and entrepreneurs, be they technical or business. And so what we're talking about is like very important for the longevity of anyone that is designing solutions. You can be the best architect in the world, but if your building never gets built, then what's the point?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So where's the money in the organization? You did a really nice job of enumerating who the stakeholders were, but presumably all stakeholders are not equal. And you pointed out that one stakeholder may have to dip their hand in another stakeholder's pocket. Who tends to have the deepest pockets?
To be honest, that would probably be a little bit more of a sales question than I am intimately knowledgeable mm-hmm. about. But between those three roles, typically money can be found, or sometimes it's not even an issue of finding money. It's just an issue of proving that the solution will actually generate money and save money. And that's kind of the mental hurdle. Yes, this is going to cost us, but not doing it is going to cost us more. Mm-hmm. Sharing that message, and not just us. Here's the important thing. It's not just us sharing that message. It could be us saying, why don't you go talk to our other customer who is in your analogous role at a different hospital? Because, we drink our own Kool-Aid, but you should drink, whatever Kool-Aid you want, and go talk to somebody out there who's benefited from some of these solutions. And that really, hands down, is just extraordinarily powerful when we're in the situation where we are referring to other successful projects and allowing people to speak to their counterparts who really understand like the specific challenges that they are in, the specific questions that they're trying to answer, and have lived for years with kind of the fruit of a solution that's been implemented.
Very good. Well, let's get back to the technology then. We talked a little bit about light-based systems and kind of eased our way towards radio frequency-based systems. But what are the what would you say are the prime tools in your kit bag that you find you're using now? And how has that changed?
It's changed quite a bit and I'll kind of go back deep here in company history, but when the company was founded, this was all RFID technology using handheld scanners and people going around constantly circulating in a hospital to scan a room, typically a room where inventory is expected to be, like a clean room or a soiled room, and scanning the barcode on the door jamb and then uploading asset locations as frequently as the rounds were completed to to kind of simulate a real-time visibility. And that was very, that was much more effective than not having any solution. And efficacy of that actually led Vizia to be selected by a hospital to run their equipment distribution center. And so that's kind of a tangent and another kind of real world environment where we have learned a lot of lessons about equipment distribution and the specific challenges in it. And we still do that in Southern California. But to, you know, to get back to your question, there are so many technologies out there that are really kind of trying to crack the nut of relative low expense, longevity, wide coverage of use cases, easy to deploy, easy to maintain. You know, I could keep going, but those are some of the big ones. And so, you know, I think that different OEMs are going about that in their different ways according to sort of the heritage and expertise in that organization. And I think it can be achieved. I have seen just a lot of progress. You know, I mean, there's ultra wideband is very impressive in some regards. Yeah. I think the discussion that we see when we're looking at the different dimensions to evaluate an RTLS, it reminds me a little bit of like, you know, like Pokemon cards or something like that, where, you know, you have I never played Pokemon, so I hope this holds, but, you know, you have a character on a card and they have different attributes of like strength, or maybe Dungeons and Dragons. I can relate to that, you know? And so there is no solution out there that is just across the board, like the obvious winner. We are in a period of immense competition right now with companies like duking it out. And they're, to some extent, they're kind of duking it out in the dark, because if you are trying to develop an RTLS, it's not like you have access. It's not like you can order a demo kit from every other OEM out there and kind of bring it in and deploy it and figure out how to do better than it. So part of what we do in the lab is we provide feedback to the OEMs in an anonymized fashion about our understanding of the capabilities of that system and how they stack up against kind of other offerings. We look at cost models, we look at ease of deployment, ease of ownership, you know, accuracy, like all those kind of different dimensions that are, you know, a long list. But I suppose that, you know, the highest concentration of OEMs right now appear to be working in Bluetooth and to kind of leverage the standards that exist and the ubiquity and availability of hardware to try and best crack that nut as best as possible. And even, you know, organizations that may not have a heritage of Bluetooth, like they're, you know, they've been created based on a different locating technology, they are also looking at, are there ways that I can integrate Bluetooth? And what does that mean if we were to do that? Like, what use cases does it support? What does it unlock? What value does it create? So that's, you know, I mean, that's like at a very high level. Obviously, I'm not getting too granular on it, but that's a lot of what I see and kind of where the hot spot of interest is. When you are considering RTLS that are maybe standalone solutions. And by standalone, I mean, you know, that are not necessarily leveraging like access points that have Bluetooth. The other interesting area where I think there's a lot of movement, and I can certainly see a lot of potential, is riding on the back of infrastructure that already exists and is ubiquitous in a building, like lighting. You know, so it could be using, attempting to use visual light communication to establish location. It could be embedding Bluetooth sensors in light trays, which are, you know, obviously like in every room, and are already wired, are going to be installed by a different, you know, a non-special or a, you know, an electrician. So it doesn't require retaining a specialized tray to do that. So those are kind of some of the areas that I see a lot of movement. And I think that there's a lot of smart consumers out there who are kind of waiting for something to break in a significant way that really does result in a system where, you know, your Dungeons and Dragons card of that system like has really high marks across all of the different dimensions, except for cost, low mark.
Yeah. And maybe it's a matter of having a few of the right cards that complement each other. So you have, you know, you have a team that where there's people that are good at defense and attack and all that sort of stuff. I've actually never played Dungeons and Dragons, but I've played a lot of computer games that I think have been derived from it. What about angle of arrival for Bluetooth? Are you seeing uptake on that? Because that seems to, yeah. But you can imagine a system that of Bluetooth readers that do angle of arrival, but also can, you know, just listen as well. And you know, I always felt like, well, this is basically an ecosystem that Coupa just owns, but now there are other vendors, Chinese vendors, and the Bluetooth 5.1 standard has been out long enough that there's more than one source for angle of arrival. Is that becoming established, would you say?
I would say that there's a lot of interest in it. I, you know, when I think of a solution like that, which, you know, angle of arrival, typically the devices are fairly expensive due to the complexity of the antennas inside. And, you know, typically they're going to require PoE. So
power over Ethernet.
Right. Power over Ethernet. And when you look at those two requirements and you kind of compare it to the real close-knit scale of hospital rooms, that's a heavy lift to bring PoE into every room. It's a very disruptive process in a hospital. Like, you're moving ceiling tiles, you're doing dust isolation, negative pressure areas. So, you know, although it can result in a very durable, very accurate system, there are just some kind of architectural and realistic constraints in it. So, you know, for example, the hockey puck tracking that I think Coupa did a movie of. Like, that is a brilliant use of that. You've got a wide open area, you have really clear sight lines, you know, you have that, you know, very high level of accuracy, extremely low latency. But I suppose I question how well a system with those requirements kind of maps onto an extremely different architecture and environment.
Yeah, good observation. Interesting. You mentioned negative pressure, and I think I understand that, but can you unpack it a bit? And
yeah, it's simply that if you are in a patient room, if you're moving around architectural acoustic ceiling tiles, you're going to generate dust, and you need a way to contain the dust. And so you have to set up some kind of, let's call it a tent around the workspace so that that dust does not bleed out into the rest of the patient room. So, you know, the requirements, if you're trying to install something where you need to move around acoustical ceiling tiles in a live hospital environment, well, first of all, you can imagine that it's not possible if the room is being used. So then you get into a deploy scenario where we're trying to kind of play whack-a-mole. We're like, is that room empty? Like, can we get in there? Who's coming? Like, are we getting a bed come in? Like, you know, do we have the time that we need? It's very messy, essentially, to do that. And not to mention the cost, you know, I mean, anytime you're adding PoE, you're adding switches, you're potentially paying for union labor, you're creating a lot of disruption, mm-hmm. less in a kind of a greenfield or a new project, but to kind of retrofit an existing hospital to the point where you need PoE in every room or even every other room, like it's very demanding. Somebody needs to feel very committed to that particular approach.
Which is difficult when you're pioneering. If everyone was doing it, then it would just be the cost of doing business. But before you get kind of mass adoption, then it's a little trickier. You mentioned VLC, visual light communication, and it occurs to me last time we covered this was years ago. So can you just explain briefly what that is?
Sure. Visual light communication rides on kind of the similar idea of let's leverage a ubiquitous element that is required to be present in a building or, you know, in our case, in a hospital. So we're leveraging these lighting trays, and we are controlling the flashing, essentially, mm-hmm. of the light in a way that we can communicate information about the specific location of that light fixture or a group of light fixtures. Mm-hmm. And it's super interesting. I think it's, you know, just the idea that it could potentially use or leverage, or with a small modification, you could achieve ubiquity across a hospital is very appealing. The challenge is that, you know, it is visual light communication. So if you don't have a visual of it, you are not going to know where you are. And, you know, in order to get a visual of it, you need a camera. You need some kind of, you know, lens on the tag, on the ESO-TRAT tag. And you're going to need a chip that's going to add more expense than kind of a Bluetooth chip. And so I think that there are circumstances where it can make a lot of sense and can be very powerful, but there are also some, you know, constraints in that. Using an iPhone, for example, with a front forward camera and walking mm-hmm. around is a perfect match for visual light communication. Like someone is trying to navigate, they have their phone out, it's seeing the sequence of flashes, it's communicating with the cloud to understand where it is, you know, great use case. But, you know, something like where you have a tag, the tag could potentially be under a patient gown or on the bottom side of a bed or, you know, in some location that is required due to the clinical needs of that equipment, it may not see some of that.
Yeah, it's phenomenal technology. When I was at Qualcomm, we got to tap into this treasure trove of IP and technologies that have been developed by Qualcomm Labs, which is like basically Qualcomm at the time was spending, I think, about $5 billion a year on R&D. So they had just so much. And VLC, visual light communication, was one of the technologies they worked on because you could use a phone and it had the camera. And so in many ways, that was free, and everyone's getting LED lighting that has this ability to essentially transmit Morse code only so fast you can't see it. You don't detect the flicker. And then they were showing centimeter level accuracy in X, Y, and Z dimensions, which is just phenomenal. Very, very impressive. If you've got the camera out. And so I think our answer then was, well, we'll use BLE in combination with VLC. So you'll know that you're in the zone because of BLE. BLE could push out a message that triggers an app. You open the app and then the app starts using the camera and you're off to the races. But a lot of fun. I feel like we've been going for a while here. I feel I'd love to go longer, but we should probably wrap it up. Any other key technology trends that you think we should cover before we move on to the fun part of the show where we get to talk about your background and music choices?
Well, I am excited about the work that you are doing and kind of how we are going to move into a level of just extreme ubiquitousness of tats that provide a wide range of price points and capabilities that allow us to, you know, I'm keeping an eye on kind of the progress and movement in that space, and I'm quite excited about it. I'm quite interested in how it develops.
Yeah, so I mean, my day job is at Wiliot. So they're a sponsor of this podcast. So we'll take a minute just to talk about that. I absolutely hadn't been planning to do this, but you know, we've been flirting in this area of healthcare for some time, for all the obvious reasons. It's kind of a well-established market, and the tracking of infusion pumps and other high-cost capital assets. That's a well-trod lane. It has all the issues that you've described, but I think, you know, the opportunity to, when you're using we call them pixels, but postage stamp sized stickers that can broadcast Bluetooth. The way I see that working is, yeah, I'm using my battery powered tags for, and maybe even doing angle of arrival, for certain use cases, but I can use that infrastructure to also listen to the broadcasts from these things. And then I have the option to start tagging consumable assets, not just fixed assets. So I can start tagging the face masks back in the day when those were in desperately short supply, and I can see where those are being hoarded. And one of the use cases I really love is the consignment use case, where you have increasingly, you know, hospitals are a business, capital's in short supply. You know, we're seeing providers of products that are saying to hospitals, you don't even need to buy this product. So I'm going to supply you with whatever it is, arm braces or knee braces, and I'm going to put a supply in your hospital, in your clinic. You don't need to buy it. When it gets dispensed and given to a patient, I'm just going to bill the insurance company directly. And that works great as long as you don't lose track of the arm braces and the knee braces. So if you have the ability to tag them with a Bluetooth sticker, then you can start to perform this financial engineering, which has really got nothing to do with radio waves and angle of arrival. It's just like making sure that you solve the problem of a busy nurse not signing out and doing the paperwork. You can see where products have gone. And that allows you to suddenly take a whole bunch of cost and capital requirements away from the hospital and start some very innovative financial engineering, as well as wireless engineering. But I think, and tracking instruments in operating theaters. There's so many interesting use cases.
I will add a small comment that we do track rental consignment equipment, and we have a module. Again, we've been really dialing in software very, very specific to our users, and so we have a module that allows customers to track rental equipment. And for some of those customers, one of the reports that we create is their source of truth for billing. We're not down to, you know, the mask level, but that is true for rental consignment equipment in some cases.
Very interesting. Well, actually, one thing I did want to ask you about was the Wi-Fi access point providers, the Arubas, the Cisco Merakis. Now, they all have a play in RTLS. Are you seeing them getting any traction? They're certainly for companies like ours, they're a gateway from Bluetooth to the wide area network. So they have a role to play there. But they can also do coarse grain location tracking, zonal location tracking. Is that getting any uptake?
Yeah. It's getting a lot of uptake of conversation for sure. You know, because that the idea that, oh, we've already got all the hardware that we need, very appealing. Who doesn't want to believe that they, you know, the new APs that they just, you know, installed, who doesn't want to believe that those are capable of additional use cases? Mm. So it's a very compelling idea that you can leverage existing technology. And it's been around for a while, but it is really gaining traction right now. I think that the question that it's all about just understanding what are you trying to accomplish? Because yes, you can get, you know, moderate level of location accuracy, leveraging that existing technology. And of course, it has to be installed at the right density. You have to have good coverage. You know, it's not just like, oh, we selected this model, so, you know, we're good to go. There are plenty of other conditions that need to be met. And I believe that you also need to enable those services and pay a fee to use them. Mm-hmm. So if you are combining kind of all those things where you're looking at, you know, you're looking at cost to enable the service, you've got the service enabled, but do you have a great piece of software that does what you need to do with that information? If not, who's providing it? Where is it coming from? How are you creating value from that information? And even if you do have a great piece of software, like, let's just be really clear about what that type of accuracy, which would not fall under the, you know, level of like room level certainty. It's like you said, it's kind of much more zonal. We're drawing a bigger circle around our blue dot is bigger. What are we trying to solve for? What can we solve for with that information? And if you're talking about the, you know, some of the entry level, I'll call them entry level, but they're the entry level on more familiar use cases like asset tracking, that might be fine. You know, that might be all that you need. You send an equipment technician out and you say, it's in one of those four rooms. I don't know which one, but go check. You'll find. But, you know, again, like when you move up the spectrum of use cases, the question to the customer is then, sure, that this is a solution. Are you okay knowing that this infrastructure will not be able to provide you at any point? Not, I won't say at any point, but, you know, for the foreseeable future, it will not be able to support these use cases. And when you bring in, you know, a use case like hand hygiene, for example, which has real numbers associated with it and real, you know, it's tied to reimbursable rates. It's, you know, the financial argument to invest in a system that can support that changes with those use cases.
What about the electromagnetic field sensing? Are you seeing anything from that? We've had one of the leading vendors of that on the podcast a few months ago. And there's another one which I came across recently called Orient, spelt with two I's. They're an Israeli company. And it seems pretty amazing. They're basically looking at the Earth's and the building's magnetic fluctuations, which are like a signature, and you know, rather like when you run a mag stripe through an old-fashioned credit card reader, you get data. That data comes from the compass in your phone, and you can work out pretty accurately, as long as the person's moving, where they are. Is that anything that's hit your radar yet, or not?
No, but I am going to check out that podcast.
Yeah. So have a look. I'm having a senior moment in terms of who the previous vendor was, but it was definitely earlier this year. And as I say, Orient are a competitor. And we're finding that very interesting because we see the value of mobile readers. The phone is a great reader of of Bluetooth tag technology, especially low-cost tags. And in the future, it'll be an energy source, either because the firmware will be activated on the phones to use the radios that are kind of sitting latent, or when we have our next generation of tags, they'll be able to sip away at even weaker sources of energy. But that's going to allow us to use the phone more and more as opposed to fixed infrastructure. And, you know, whether it's a phone or some kind of Zebra Android device, then there's, you know, more and more staff are being given tablets, are being given phones, it seems to me at least. And then you can use that to essentially survey and crowdsource the location of tags. And we've seen, certainly in the retail context, you can cover pretty much the 100% of the footprint of the store over a given period of time of somebody walking around with their phone. With that, so you, that means you essentially you combine that with something like Orient, where you can tell where the phone is. So I know where the phone is, I know what the phone can see. And yeah. Then I don't need to start punching holes in walls or worrying about power over Ethernet.
I will definitely learn more about that. You know, I had some experience with the like RF fingerprinting and kind of the capabilities of that. And I'm reminded a little bit of, do you remember that Matthew McConaughey movie where he communicates across time using gravity with his daughter? Does that ring any bells?
Yeah.
since I rewatched that movie, I think I watched it, you know, when it first came out, and then I rewatched it, and I made a mental bookmark to myself, thinking, I need to learn more about gravity. This is really, really cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So the magnetic field reading, it's a cool area. It's been around for a while, and it seems to be getting traction. And you know, no infrastructure is the promise. But like all these things, it has limitations. Well, very good, Andreas. Thanks so much. We've got another part of our conversation to do, but thanks for the business side of it. And I urge people to stay on and hear what your three songs are and how. Landscape architecture meets RTLS in a very interesting manner.
Thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure.
So I was really struck when I was looking at your LinkedIn profile that you, seems like you started off as a landscape architect. Is that right?
I did. I went to UC Berkeley and earned a master's degree in landscape architecture. And worked for a brief stint into kind of the economic collapse of 2008-2009. And then started a firm, mostly because that was the option that was available at the time. There were not a lot of places hiring. And I had a couple of good relationships, and one thing led to another. And I started and ran a design firm in the Bay Area for about 10 years. We had a small crew there, and then we moved to Portland. And so we had a
Oregon.
Portland, Oregon, correct.
Yeah.
We opened up another small office there. And, you know, we were kind of in the backdrop. It was, we were starting a family at the time. And we kind of had this realization, and we, as my wife and I, we had this realization that, oh my gosh, we're really far from all of our family. And so long as we have the option, or can create the option, to have our family kind of in the context of more family, and that geography and people were welcoming towards that, we decided to make a big move. And with that came a significant career change as well.
Ah, so you it was when you moved to Albuquerque that you gave up the landscape architecture practice?
It was, they were almost synchronous. They weren't in, you know, 100% synchronous, but yeah. It's been a transition that I've reflected on quite a bit. And I've done a lot of reading and actually some writing about it too. If anybody's interested, I can
I'm interested. Well, because my father was a landscape architect at one point, and so, you know, we're all obsessed with our fathers, or at least I am. And so any profession that he had is immediately about four times more interesting to me. He was also a philosopher. And I am always struck when I talk to people who are in technology who come from an area that seems completely unrelated. And both of those are, and I've met some brilliant computer scientists and technologists who just have developed great mental faculties, and somehow they've pivoted. How did you get from landscape architecture to real-time location systems, which is like computing and radio frequency technology? And it's like, I can't think of anything further away.
Well, okay. This is a great opportunity to make an argument then.
Okay.
So, you know, first I should say that the space that Vizia inhabits is not the hardware layer. Mm-hmm. We work with a lot of OEMs and leverage their technology and create a software product using it. We are a hardware agnostic company. So we, you know, and I could talk about that a little bit later, but essentially, you know, what I'm creating is a product of value. And the process of creating that software product, especially, you know, because it is, there's a lot of stakeholders, it's complex, there is bureaucracy, it has geospatial components to it. A large part of the success of it is communication and adoption. And if you look at all of those skills, like, what else is an architect but a product manager of a building? So,
I got to hand it to you. It's a compelling argument.
And yeah, I could really keep going, but I'll keep it kind of succinct at that level. But I was, you know, it was a little bit, you know, it was a little bit of an abrupt transition, and it took me a little bit of time to put all the pieces together and realize that a lot of the value that I was carrying forward, and had to retrain for a different subject matter. But, you know, as a landscape architect, and for folks who may not know, that's simply an architect of outdoor spaces, mm-hmm. Plazas, schools, playgrounds, et cetera. It's all the same process of understanding your stakeholders, understanding what they need, putting together a concept design, understanding the technical constraints, working with working with kind of individuals who are excellent at their individual craft, but also often need some kind of cross-functional communication, let's call it. So I've been very pleased, and I'm very grateful towards my design background for and you know, the professional work that I did to learn a rigorous design process and what that looks like. And I think that, you know, especially in the context of, we make software for hospitals essentially, and a hospital is a complex social, physical environment. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I like to believe, one of the things that I believe I can add in value is the knowledge that the success of a solution is so much, it is an engineering solution. You know, all of real-time location systems are a marvel of engineering, but in order to provide value, it's less of an engineering problem and more of a communication challenge, a support, a you know, sort of what it's relying on a lot of skills that folks with engineering backgrounds, sort of pure engineering backgrounds, like to call soft skills. Mm-hmm. But they're not really soft, they're just skills. And they often kind of make the difference between two excellent and well-engineered products, one of them being widely adopted and used and thriving, and the other kind of withering on the vine.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And I feel like you just rewired my brain, and that's partially what you have to do when you're selling a product and when you are getting people to use it. You have to persuade them to change, to see things in a different way. And there are so many of those non-technical aspects to success of any enterprise. And in doing this, you've made me even more interested in what your music choices are. So give us your three songs that
All right. Well, I picked three. The first is an album, actually. And it's an album that was left by the previous owner in a used car that I bought when I first... When I first kind of made my big, I'm going west to explore the world and find myself, you know.
Are we talking CD, cassette, 8-track, or a big vinyl, a record that was left on the back seat?
No, it was a CD. It was also the first car that I owned that had a CD player, so it was very exciting. And it was a Dixie Chicks album called Wide Open Spaces. And it kind of corresponded to that phase of life. Kind of driving west into the unknown to kind of go on a journey of self-discovery. So that was one. And I like the songs, but more I like, you know, what it represents and kind of how it reminds me of that specific journey.
Outstanding. What's number two?
The number two is something I had listened to the other day. So we live close to the Rio Grande River, which is home to the largest contiguous cottonwood forest in, I believe, in the world. And this time of year, it's stunningly beautiful outside. And so I went for a bike ride the other day, and I listened to Into the Great Wide Open. And it kind of has this ascendant, soaring quality to it with, you know, the strong southwestern light coming in through the cottonwoods and the yellow trees. And so it was a very kind of beautiful moment.
I'm not familiar. Is this an orchestral piece, or who's
no,
it from?
It's Tom Petty. Yeah, it's kind of it's actually out of the realm of what I typically listen to, but you know, mm-hmm. It just kind of surfaced at that moment and I went with it. And then the last one was a song that some friends of ours performed when we got married, and it's the song Emmylou by First Aid Kit. And it was, they performed it without lyrics, and so it just has a very special place in my heart because it reminds me of my wedding and also, you know, some friends who are lovely enough to lug some instruments out to kind of a...
And where did you get married? Man, that is small. And whereabouts in California is Volcano?
Volcano is in the foothills. It's been a while. So it's east of Sacramento. Kind of in the foothills. So I'm struggling a little bit to tell you it wasn't near that much, which was part of the draw.
Okay, so you just tried to find a place where no one would bother you and to cut down on the expense because you knew that there wouldn't be people there, or is there another connection?
No, well, okay, so you're really pulling at the ball of twine now. So I was actually working on a project out there, a residential project, and we went out there to do a site visit. This is my landscape architecture days. Yeah. And really just loved the place and realized that it had one park, it had two small hotels, it had one of everything. And so we decided that was all we needed. We needed one of everything. We needed to double the population of the town, and we needed to have a great party, and we did.
Amazing. Well, this has been great. Andreas, it's been a delight, a real pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Likewise, and I'm so grateful for the amount of sharing that you do. I feel like you have generated and been extremely generous with all of your conversations in a very brave way. So I just wanted to say that I'm grateful for that as a person who has learned so much from your media and your sharing.
Wonderful. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. So that was Andreas. I love the combination of landscape architecture and IoT. Who knew there was a connection? But I'm a believer now. I am very grateful that you stayed with us throughout what is a pretty long episode. So thank you for that. Thank you for Aaron for editing, Brooke for promoting this episode. And again, thank you for giving us your time and sharing the fact that you listen or watch our podcast. We'll see you next time. Stay safe.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.